Case number 14-1275, Sierra Club et al. Petitioners versus Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Mr. Matthews for the petitioners, Mr. Solomon for the respondent, and Mr. Franklin for the interveners.
Thank you again, Nathan Matthews, this time on behalf of petitioners, Sierra Club, as well as Galveston Baykeeper. And again, I would like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. I'd like to begin by reiterating that the purpose of the projects are authorized by FERC in Freeport as well as in Sabine Pass is solely to enable the export of natural gas. So these are not facilities that are being constructed that will have an incidental effect of enabling or facilitating future exports. That is the sole purpose of the facilities at issue here. And that they are, the Freeport facility is, interveners have indicated that it's a $13 billion project. It's a massive investment with the capacity to export natural gas equivalent to more than 2% of the Energy Information Administration's estimate of baseline domestic natural gas production. So this is a facility that serves no purpose other than enabling the export of natural gas, that there's been a significant commitment of resources enabled by the FERC decision here, despite the fact that there's not yet a final or appealable order from the Department of Energy regarding this facility, and that the scale of this facility when measured against the overall domestic gas landscape is quite large.
Can you start with, I'm sorry to take you back where you don't like to be, but standing, your brief, opening brief doesn't even mention standing, and on a petition for review like this, you have a burden, just as you would in a complaint, to establish standing, and not just to allege it, mind you, but to establish it at summary judgment level of evidence. And you didn't do it, I mean, you just didn't do it at all until your reply brief, at which point they don't have any chance to respond to that in briefing. What are we supposed to do with that?
So we attached declarations to our opening brief.
I understand you attached stuff, but I mean, yep. Again, normally parties are supposed to argue it. We're not supposed to go hunting for it.
So this court's decision in Citizens Against Runway Expansion versus the Federal Aviation Administration summarized cases by this court holding that the rule that when standing is self-evident on the basis of the record, the rules of Circuit Rule 28 or of Sierra Club versus EPA do not apply, and that the party
means. What if it's not self-evident?
And petitioners reasonably understood their standing to be self-evident in this case, where our members live near the facility and will suffer impacts that the environmental impact statement itself identified as significant. The EIS states that the Freeport project will have significant impacts in terms of light, noise, also vibration, I believe, on members. Or not on directly members specifically, but on residents of Quintana and on folks living and recreating near the facility.
So in American Library Association versus FCC, we made clear that the court could inquire at any time and that in previous cases we've allowed, where the petitioner proceeded in good faith to think it was self-evident, to submit affidavits or even supplemental affidavits and declarations to establish standing. So that's what you've attempted to do, I gather.
There's a lot, as I understand the case and the others like it, the court allowed submission of affidavits later than the reply,
right,
where evidence appeared for the first time. And here, we're not asking to be allowed to introduce new evidence in the reply. We explained the factual basis for our claim for standing in the opening brief, or in the declarations attached to the opening brief. And again, because our members were complaining of injuries that FERC itself had identified as being significant environmental effects, we understood our standing to be self-evident. So our understanding was that because our standing was self-evident, that we were not required to further brief standing, either by Circuit Rule 28 or by...
But I think to close the loop here, you at least have to show what... example that is it Mrs. Olam has standing?
Right. Oh, and I mean, again, because our members have testified that they live and recreate near the facility, that they will have their enjoyment of the beaches near the facility, but also in their homes, adversely impacted by the noise, light, vibration from the project, that the project injures our members in a way that this court recognizes is sufficient basis for standing in the Minnesink residence case and other cases on aesthetic injury.
Where does Ms. Oldham say she's going to visit less frequently, visit Quintana less frequently?
I believe that she testifies both that she'll visit less frequently, but also that when she does visit, her enjoyment of the facility or of the beaches will be diminished. And I recognize that.
I'm just concerned about what's going on, but I don't actually see her saying anywhere that she's going to change her behavior. And then we got Mr. Hershey, who's talking about a pipeline that I don't think is relevant here.
So Mr. Hershey is...
I'm not saying you couldn't have had affidavits that were self-evident. I'm just wondering whether you did.
So I think one answer to your question is that our view of this circuit's case law and of Supreme Court standing case law is that a change in behavior is not required to demonstrate standing. For example, if a member is going to have loud noise from pile driving for construction of this facility, disrupt their life at their home, that's an injury for purposes of standing, regardless of whether or not that noise is so bad that it causes the person to spend less time in their home or move or something. That sort of quality of life injury is itself sufficient to demonstrate standing without any change in behavior. And that our members, Melanie Oldham and Teresa, we have two declarations from members who live or spend significant time on Quintana Island who have that type of aesthetic and recreational injury. Michael Hershey is a separate case because he lives near a pipeline that would be constructed solely to serve this, where the explicit purpose of that pipeline would be to serve the Freeport export project. But I don't believe that we need to get into the injuries because the declarations from members who are adjacent to the facility itself provide a sufficient basis for standing.
All right, moving on.
I mentioned that this is a large infrastructure project whose sole purpose is to enable the exports of natural gas. And there's a large body of NEPA review, of NEPA case law regarding NEPA review of infrastructure projects. And in many cases, for example, a NEPA case concerning a bridge or a highway that will enable development in a location that otherwise was inaccessible or was less accessible, the courts have held that the fact that infrastructure development of access makes development of that area easier and more attractive means that the induced growth of additional buildings, building on an island that you couldn't get to before the bridge was built.
How do you respond to Mr. Franklin's point about foreseeability, that the very nature of the market here means that you're not going to be able to know where these things come from? It's just too speculative.
I have several responses to that. One is that the gas will have to come from somewhere, and to the extent that there's uncertainty as to how much of the gas will come from new gas production, then the balance will need to be made up by a reduction in gas consumption, and so the precise ratio of new gas production to increased coal use may be something where reasonable minds could differ, but it's clear it has to be some combination of both. The question about not knowing where gas production will occur is, first of all, irrelevant for purposes of the greenhouse gas analysis. There's been nothing in the record indicates that you would need any information about where the additional gas production would occur before you could conduct a meaningful analysis of the greenhouse gas emissions resulting from that production.
And do you have cases that support that view, besides Mid-States?
Besides Mid-States, yeah. Well, I don't believe Mid-States concerned greenhouse gases at all.
No, but the general idea that you just don't need to know where it comes from, it's just that it's happening.
Well, so for purposes of the not needing to know where it comes from, then just that it's happening for purposes of greenhouse gas analysis, we point to EPA documents explaining that because greenhouse gases are well mixed and long lived in the atmosphere, that those impacts do not depend on knowing where they are.
Right.
But we also think that the record clearly indicates that it is possible to foresee where this production will occur. In particular, the Energy Information Administration's study is built upon the National Energy Modeling System, which includes a regional breakdown of gas production in the United States and divides the lower 48 states into six different regions, and that the documentation of that model, which we called to FERC's attention in the record here, demonstrates that EIA can predict not just that production will occur, but where among those regions additional production will occur. And FERC has not provided any reason for concluding that those regional estimates on where production will occur are an insufficient basis for analyzing the ozone impacts of these projects. That, as we mentioned, and as demonstrated by documents in the record, ozone is a regional pollutant that affects ozone emissions, can affect multi-state areas, and so just the regional predictions provided by the National Energy Modeling System would provide an adequate basis for conducting an analysis of the ozone impacts of the additional production that would be induced by these projects. I'd also mention that the ozone impacts are likely to be influenced by the siting of where export facilities occur. Earlier on, I noted that the impacts of a gas facility, export facility located in the Gulf are likely to be different than the impacts of a facility located on, the Oregon coast, which are, there are also two proposals pending before FERC for Oregon facilities, and that it is likely that a facility located in the Gulf is likely to induce additional gas production in Texas or along the East Coast, whereas an Oregon facility would be more likely to induce additional gas production in the Mountain West. And that likelihood could be tested
that,
using...
Why is that? So I'm just not scientific. Why is that more likely? They tell us that no,
just because
it
it's a shorter
anywhere in the country.
Pipeline distance. And
does
the
it
pipeline
matter so much for gas? The way gas moves, does that matter?
Well, so you know, FERC's statements in the record here are that because of the nature, interconnected nature of the pipeline network, that gas processed by the Freeport or the Sabine Pass project, mm-hmm. insofar as we're talking about just the mm-hmm. increment for Sabine Pass, could come from anywhere in the Gulf or the eastern United States. The FERC's own statements reflect the fact that although there's a large interconnected pipeline network, there are fewer connections between the Mountain West and the Gulf. But those are not issues that FERC needs to speculate on because the Environmental Information Administration has the modeling tool that would let FERC predict or take an analysis of our exports from the Gulf likely to change gas production in different regions than wood exports from Oregon.
Is there any reason I just don't know. Is there any reason to think that where the gas comes from is relevant in analyzing what the environmental consequences of its production are? Is it some place that's harder to get it out than others? So maybe we do need to know where it's coming from to do this analysis? Or
well, it certainly has a potential impact to the analysis of ozone because ozone is a regional impact. And so if there's additional gas production happening in an area that, say, is already suffering heavily impacted ozone levels, the marginal contribution to ozone because of the additional gas production could cause a bigger public health consequence than if that gas production was coming at some place that had a little more headroom and didn't have as bad of regional ozone impacts. And so,
But that might affect what the EPA is doing under, you know, attainment areas or non-attainment areas, but for NEPA, does it matter whether there's a high ozone level or not? Wouldn't they just want to figure out? Is your position they should just whether it's coming in a place that has perfect, pristine, clear air or a very smoggy city? NEPA needs to measure what the impact of this increased production is on the air.
Our position is that NEPA requires not just an analysis of how many tons of pollution are going to come out of a project, but what the impact those tons of pollution are going to have. And I don't believe that FERC disagrees with that in any way, demonstrated by FERC's environmental review of the local and direct impacts of these projects here. FERC, in reviewing these projects, hasn't just said there will be X tons of nitrogen oxide pollution and Y tons of volatile organic chemicals. FERC then proceeds to talk about the context of the surrounding area and the impact of those emissions in the particular areas where they will occur, including referring to whether or not those impacts will or won't cause a violation of EPA's air quality standards. And one of the requirements for environmental impact statements provided by the NEPA regulations is to assess the extent to which actions will or won't cause violations of applicable environmental standards, including other agencies' air quality standards. And so it's not that FERC can say, we don't care about ozone because ozone is EPA's problem. It's the reverse, that EPA has designated that ozone is a problem and that triggers an obligation for FERC to think about whether FERC's actions will cause ozone levels that violate EPA standards. And that's true regardless of whether we're in the non-attainment context where there's a Clean Air Act conformity determination or just the general NEPA analysis. I'd like to return to the discussion of other cases concerning infrastructure projects, and that, again, it's the norm rather than the exception for agencies reviewing infrastructure, such as, say, building a bridge, to have to consider the effect of the additional growth that will be enabled or facilitated by that project. And that's, in those cases, there's generally no direct regulatory authority over that induced growth. The regulations specifically call for an analysis of induced growth, but there will be very, very few cases, if any, where the agency that is acting in a way that will induce growth also has direct regulatory over the growth itself.
And why isn't the better place to raise all these arguments about the consequences of exporting all this gas in a challenge to DOE's authorization of export? Why can't you do it there? Why isn't that the better place to do it?
So I have two answers to that. One is that NEPA imposes, although NEPA provides a framework for interagency cooperation, every agency has an independent obligation to ensure that the impacts have fully been considered. And so NEPA doesn't require a challenge to be made at the best place or at the agency that has the most direct authority. NEPA provides an opportunity and a right to challenge any agency's action that will lead to an indirect effect. But there's a pragmatic reason as well, which is that FERC is going first, that there is not yet an appealable order from the Department of Energy regarding exports from the Freeport project, but the FERC has already authorized construction of an investment and commitment of resources to this project.
The environmental consequences of that construction are not what you're objecting to for purposes of this case. You're objecting
correct.
To the increased production, which isn't going to happen until there's a DOE order, correct?
That's correct.
You don't have anything to worry about until there's a DOE order, and so challenge it there.
So the NEPA regulations regarding interagency cooperation and just even a single agency action clarify that it's important for environmental effects to be analyzed at the earliest possible time and before there's been any commitment of resources.
That's their problem. If they commit all these resources and then they don't get the order out of DOE because DOE does dream NEPA analysis and says we're not going to authorize it, that's their problem. But the environmental costs aren't happening any earlier. They just don't happen until there's an export decision.
Well, I would disagree, and the NEPA regulations explicitly call for consideration of environmental effects by agencies before there's any action that causes a commitment of resources. And I believe that the policy behind that is that once there has been a commitment of resources, it has the potential to influence the agency's later decision-making. And so the regulations themselves clearly require early and broad commitment of environmental impacts before any other decision-making has been made.
Have challenges, maybe whether by you or by anyone else, ever been made to one of these export decisions by the Department of Energy? Has there ever been a NEPA challenge to their export decision-making and NEPA's role in their NEPA analysis in their export decision-making?
I don't believe that there has been any reported case or any judicial challenge to any of the Department
Why
of Energy.
Not?
There haven't been very many.
Okay.
And the Department of Energy has been on a schedule that's significantly behind FERC in these proceedings. The Natural Gas Act does not provide a right for judicial review until the agency has acted to deny a request for a rehearing.
And do you have a rehearing petition?
We have a rehearing.
In this case, right?
We have a rehearing petition pending before DOE regarding DOE's authorization for Freeport. There's not yet a DOE decision regarding the Sabine increment of the additional 200 billion cubic feet per year for us to even seek rehearing of, much less a denial of rehearing that we could then appeal to this court.
And the But the rehearing petition still has, I know the briefing said it hadn't been acted on. Has it still not been acted on in this case?
It has not. We filed that rehearing request with the Department of Energy in December of 2014, and DOE has only acted on it by issuing an order saying that DOE will take additional time, extending the statutory 30-day deadline. Right. So we are continuing to wait for an appealable order there.
But then you'll be able to make, assuming they make a decision you disagree with, you'll be able to make all the arguments there that you're making here.
We will be able to make many of the arguments. We also have an argument challenging the Freeport project for FERC's failure to consider the indirect effects of the electricity that will be consumed by the project itself, which is not an issue that's kind of within.
Okay. Other than that argument, all your concerns about the environmental impact, the global warming impact, the production of whether it's more gas leading to production, use of more coal, all those things you can raise in the Department of Energy decision, if need be.
I see that I'm out of time, but if I may answer your question, we have raised similar issues in our request for a hearing for the Department of Energy.
Is there anything other than the electrical power thing that you can't raise then?
We can't raise the fact that there will have been a commitment of resources prior to adequate NEPA review. So when we challenge the Department of Energy decision, there won't have been an investment or disturbance on the ground that might act as a thumb on the scale that would prevent the agency from properly considering.
I assume if they were to rely on that, you would go, hang on, you can't have your cake and eat it too. You said over here, first over here, we can't talk about export consequences. We tried to, said we wouldn't look at it, so you can't now say, golly, too late, we can't really take it into account.
The concern underlying the NEPA requirement to consider environmental impacts at the earliest possible time and before any commitment of resources is that those commitments will be a thumb on the scale, and that not that it will be a factor that the agency will be explicitly relied upon, but that Congress, in enacting NEPA and the Council on Environmental Quality and promulgating NEPA regulations, recognize that regardless of what's in the reasons given in formal agency decision-making documents, that the agency's process of making decisions has the potential to be influenced by commitments of resources that have already been made, or just simply by decision-making momentum. And so the statute and the regulations reflect a policy judgment that in order to avoid the potential for that sort of a bias or a thumb on the scale, that decisions need to be made at the earliest possible time.
Let me ask you, and I may be incorrect, but in one of the cases, the department filed an addendum and a greenhouse gas study, but saying it didn't need to do that. So is that in this case or the state line case?
It's not in the administrative record in either cases. The Department of Energy didn't file that. The Department of Energy has done nothing about Sabine Pass. So insofar as that's something, an action the DOE took, it's relevant to Freeport.
So hasn't the Department of Energy indicated that at least it's taken a position on these issues already? Not that they're subject to challenge, because it may not be final, but therefore that shows the importance of trying to raise these issues before FERC, since DOE has already indicated it doesn't think it's obligated to address these matters? The answer may be no, but I just
I apologize. I'm struggling slightly with the question.
My first response
would be that we're challenging FERC's decision, and that FERC's decision can be affirmed if at all on the record before it, and that any of those materials were not before FERC.
What I'm getting at is that the Department of Energy reserved the right to reject what FERC recommends to it, and it mm-hmm. could do whatever it thinks is required, but it's already indicated that it doesn't think it is required to do certain things.
That's correct. The Department of Energy has indicated that it does not believe any further analysis is required, and that indication is both in the environmental addendum that DOE released, which again is postdates FERC decision here, we also have DOE's order, which we have sought rehearing of, where in that order DOE also agreed that it did not believe that it needed to consider these effects.
So following up on Judge Millett's questions to you, you have this rehearing order, and suppose on rehearing the Energy Department says, given the congressional obligation, at least as to non-free trade countries, our obligations, in fact, go further than we initially thought. And that would open up the opportunity, would it not, consistent with this reservation, for the Energy Department to do precisely the type of analysis you want. I understand your argument is it's FERC's duty, first of all, to do this. But I just want to explore, in other words, if you're closed down here, there's no guarantee that you have an opportunity later, although counsel for intervener said you would, as I understood intervener's argument.
Assuming that the Department of Energy denies our pending request for a rehearing, we will have an opportunity to seek review of that denial of rehearing. As I mentioned, that does not provide all of the same opportunities for relief that this appeal does, in part because there is an important issue in this case which is not present before the Department of Energy, but also because of the fact that here our concern is that FERC has violated the NEPA obligation to consider the full range of indirect effects of FERC's action prior to actually reaching a decision and prior to authorizing construction and investment. I do see that I'm over time.
So let me just ask you here again.
You can't get out that easy.
Not after what we've been through. At least as to the electric usage requirement, it may be we don't have jurisdiction because you didn't raise it on rehearing.
So I confess to being somewhat confused by their argument that we did not raise it on rehearing. And first of all, I believe
well,
we did
raise it. You didn't raise it as to how they characterized.
Right. So in our comments on the draft environmental impact statement,
yes,
we argued that that was an important issue that had been entirely omitted from analysis and that FERC needed to consider it. FERC then provided some, although we contend inadequate, consideration of that issue in the final environmental impact statement. As I understand FERC's argument, they are now saying that because we did not anticipate the partial flaws in the way that they presented their analysis in response to our comment, that we can't challenge their inadequate resolution of the comment we raised, which would be a twisting of the requirement to present issues before the agency and to exhaust issues before appeal. FERC clearly understood that we had raised the effects of additional electric production as an issue in our comments on the draft environmental impact statement. I believe that our request for a hearing to FERC also plainly flagged the nature of our concern with the way FERC responded to that comment. Our request for a hearing explained that our concern was that FERC failed to juxtapose the indirect effects of electricity production with the no-action alternative, and so FERC didn't make it clear that the effects from electricity production were actually much greater than the direct effects from the project itself.
I understood your concern to be the fact that they were doing the megawatt measurement. Is that the concern?
That's the deficiency that we, that's our concern is that.
When you first raised the issue, you pointed them to a database that did things in megawatt hours.
So our,
so the first thing, hey, you need to look at this thing, see what they did over here, megawatt hours.
Our concern.
They go, great, megawatt hours. And then you don't object to megawatt hours on rehearing. You just object to not considering the no action alternative.
Right, and our concern is that.
So
our concern is that an indirect effect of the project will be a massive increase in electricity demand, and that generating that electricity will have consequences, and that the FERC needs to consider the effects of that electricity demand or creating that electricity and juxtapose it against the no-action alternative. We clearly flagged that in our comment on the draft environmental impact statement that FERC needed to compare the effects of the project against the no-action alternative. We did point to the EPA's eGRID database as being a tool that FERC could use in performing that analysis, But that, our comment, we certainly did not intend it to suggest, and I don't believe that it's reasonably read to suggest, that all FERC needed to do would pull the EPA EGRID numbers for what the emissions per megawatt hour of electricity production in Texas were. And that was the first step of the analysis. But that in order to actually compare the action and no action alternatives, those per megawatt hour numbers would need to be multiplied by the number of actual megawatt hours
used. Just to be clear, your objection now in this court is that they didn't do the apples to apples comparison in the metric of how the electrical usage is measured, not that they didn't undertake the analysis of no action. It's simply they did apples to apples.
Correct. Yes, our concern is it's not a complicated analysis that we're contending that FERC failed to undertake. It's just one that has huge impacts, and that merely identifying the emissions per megawatt hour doesn't provide any indication of how big the total number of emissions really are. And so FERC could have performed the analysis that we think is required, potentially just by multiplying the emission per megawatt hour by the number of megawatt hours used. Although that's really just a multiplication problem, it's one that's incredibly significant here because it's such a big number of megawatt hours.
I just didn't see that argument. Tell me if I'm wrong. I didn't see that argument in your rehearing petition to FERC.
Well, so the way that we've attempted to present that argument in our rehearing petition to FERC is that the analysis FERC actually performed of comparing emissions from generating a megawatt hour of electricity versus the equivalent of using a gas-fired turbine directly only provides a comparison between an action the chosen action and a design alternative. But there is no way to use that comparison without another step of analysis to compare the project against the no-action alternative. And so does that answer your question? Or?
All right.
Thank you.
Counsel for the commission.
May it please the court again. I'll go immediately to the last issue that was addressed, which is the air emissions issue. The commission did exactly what Sierra Club asked us to do in its comments on the draft environmental impact statement. Their concern was with respect to the electric non-emitting motors that power the refrigeration compressors. This is very technical stuff. If you look at, and you don't have to do it now because it's very technical, but if you turn to page 1045 of the Freeport joint appendix, you'll note that there are lines on the side indicating that the commission's mathematical analysis is entirely new because we were doing what we were asked to do. And in particular, we were comparing the environmental effect of electric motors driving these compressors against the more standard natural gas fired compression. So for purposes of the math and the numbers, not only did we provide the numbers in a scientifically meaningful way in pounds per megawatt, which Sierra Club never challenged in any petition for rehearing, but we also compared the environmental effects of the electric emissions versus a hypothetical on-site natural gas emissions. We did what they asked, and that was never again presented to the agency. Turning to the lead arguments concerning the indirect effects of induced production, higher prices, and effect on coal burning, the FERC thumb is not on the scale as to what the Department of Energy can do. I don't think the timing of FERC and DOE action is relevant, but to the extent Sierra Club keeps arguing that the FERC went first, actually, with respect to orders, the Department of Energy issued two orders in 2003 conditionally approving the export of LNG from Freeport. That was conditional based upon a satisfactory environmental review by the FERC, which it undertook in 2014.
Mr. Solomon, help me understand the relationship between FERC and the DOE when it comes to the EIS. When we say that FERC is the lead agency, does that entail, does that require that FERC look beyond those areas for which it has statutory authority to act?
No, but the commission is limited, of course, to its statutory delegated authority. The Department of Energy, when it comes to the actual construction of facilities, is a cooperating agency and participated.
And so what does that mean for NEPA analysis? I mean, it suggests to me, and I'm not an expert in this, you are, it suggests to me that FERC has to ask questions that involve DOE and not just FERC. Is that not right?
That is correct. However, the findings and conclusions...
If that's correct, then the line of questions we asked at the previous case suggested that the DOE may very well have responsibilities to look at upstream problems. Wouldn't FERC have that responsibility as the lead agency? Doesn't have statutory authority if it was just acting on its own. I'm with you, but now that they're acting as lead agency, doesn't that entail a more thorough NEPA analysis that would include the results that come from Department of Energy increasing the amount of exports?
No, because the Department of Energy has the opportunity, as an exercise in this case, to engage in additional environmental fact-finding that is germane to the Department.
But then what does it mean that FERC is the lead agency on the environmental impact statement?
Congress's concern in 15 U.S.C. 717N is that the FERC be the lead agency for purposes of environmental NEPA review and obtaining all federal authorizations. The Congress in the 2005 Act was very concerned about the timeliness of federal action and provided these additional procedures.
When FERC is the lead agency, what areas does it need to look at in terms of the NEPA review that it wouldn't need to look at when it's just doing an environmental impact statement on its own, is not as a lead agency? What are the added responsibilities? What areas do they need to investigate, analyze as lead agency that they wouldn't have to if it was just a standalone?
The FERC is lead agency for purposes of putting together the environmental document. I do want to differentiate again between environmental review of the facilities and environmental review of the export. The Department of Energy cooperates in the preparation of the environmental impact study. In the case of Freeport, it was hundreds and hundreds of pages and focused on the environmental impacts of the facility.
It was
978 pages. Purposes of this court, it occupies almost all of volume two of the Freeport materials.
That's what my clerk tells me.
I encourage your clerk to go back to volume two, because it demonstrates that the commission was not hiding or shirking anything with respect to the facilities.
Imagine a case where FERC is not a lead agency on this. It's just they're just doing EIS because they're the only one involved. Would it be less than 978 pages?
No, it probably would have been the same 978 pages. The Department of Department of Energy, because it has.
So they don't then look to, just so I understand, they don't then, when as acting as lead agency, they don't then look to statutory authority the Department of Energy has and environmental consequences for exercise of that authority that they don't. FERC is only looking at its own statutory authority and what it's authorized to act when it doesn't look elsewhere.
That is correct,
okay.
But The agency is, of course, looking at its statutory authority and is focusing on the environmental effects of the facility. The Department of Energy has a responsibility to supplement the environmental impact okay. statement as necessary and appropriate to consider the environmental effects.
Except when it's a free trade country, and then it's either yeah. now or never. I assume when these facilities are built, they're built, I assume they're all exporting to both free trade and non-free trade agreement countries,
well,
right?
Well, I believe what Mr. Franklin said is once they have the authorization, at this point, they're unaware as to whether the gas will flow to
right,
free trade or not free trade.
Something's going to be both. Right.
But,
and they've got free trades, at least as the suit's being passed, they've got free. I think as with this one, they have free trade authorization too already, correct?
Mm-hmm, because
authorization for free trade countries, correct?
Correct.
Correct. Okay. Then, and so I'm back to where I was before. The whole point of being, maybe the reason Congress wanted you to be the lead agency was it realized, it wrote that statute that says it's going to be automatic if the application is to export to a free trade country. And so we need FERC to front load that NEPA analysis because it is now or never. And we know some of the licensing is going to, we hope, is going to be to free trade countries.
Well, the Commission did not front load the environmental impact statement with effects beyond its statutory jurisdiction, but the Department of Energy, much to its credit, backloaded the environmental review to include the two studies that Judge Rogers referenced earlier.
But that's only to the extent that, that the application was for some non-free trade countries. But for there are already authorizations out there for countries that qualify for free trade treatment, correct?
Correct.
Did it do any of this analysis you're now referencing, including those two studies, when it issued that order? I would assume not. It's automatic under the statute.
The authorization is automatic,
right.
But the Department of Energy, and again, I'm not sure to which extent it refers to exports to free trade or non-free trade, but they did engage in the additional fact-finding found in the 2014 addendum. It is truly an addendum to the environmental document that the FERC prepared, and it prepared the life cycle greenhouse gas study from the perspective of the importing countries. What those two
But it took the position it had no obligation to do those studies.
Yes, and we agree with that.
Where FERC is the lead agency on environmental matters, and I'll focus on Judge Millett's free trade countries, FERC saying it has no obligation to do these types of studies.
Right, we are saying that we
have. Then what I'll call the complete environmental analysis required under NEPA is not done unless FERC does it.
The complete analysis under NEPA was done by FERC for FERC's responsibilities in the environmental.
What we're trying to get at is Congress set up this scheme, and the tricky part is this free trade country. It just sort of bypasses energy. And the whole point has been heretofore argued, FERC has no obligation to do anything more than the impact of the facility itself as FERC interpreted its obligation in the EA, and in the Sabine case, and here in the EIS.
Well,
and nobody ever gets to look at what everyone has been saying, oh, that can be addressed in a challenge to the Department of Energy. And the Department of Energy will come back and say, Congress said it's to free trade countries. Basically, we have no role.
No, I believe the Department of Energy does have a role. Again, it is difficult with respect.
But the Energy Department has already said it wasn't obligated to do those studies that it, as you put it, backloaded.
Right, but the Department of Energy said it wasn't obligated not because of the lack of statutory authority, but because of the lack of reasonable foreseeability, regardless
so
of what.
So you read those studies as saying that the Department of Energy is not a party before us today, so it's hard to know what its position is on all of this, has acknowledged that it has a legal responsibility to address these additional, because I read it quite the opposite.
It is the opposite. As the Department of Energy said, it found that it did not have the legal obligation under NEPA to look at these upstream impacts, induced production, increased natural gas prices, effect on fuel switching and coal burning. What it said, and I think this is quite to its credit, it said that it had been receiving these arguments in its proceedings, indeed, from Sierra Club, which is making exactly the same indirect effects argument to the Department of Energy that it is making to the FERC. And the Department of Energy said, again, to its credit, we don't have a legal responsibility to do this because of lack of causal connectivity and reasonable foreseeability, but it will do so anyway. And those studies, I think, demonstrate precisely our point as to the lack.
No, but Mr. Solomon, that's a merits argument. What I'm trying to focus on is who has the legal obligation. And a lot of the argument has been Sierra Club's in the wrong place. It ought to be challenging the energy order when it's issued. But in fact, energy is in a public citizen posture as to the free trade countries. Congress has already decided that exports go to free trade countries.
Right, but I do not believe.
So just let me be clear. You started out your argument in the other case by giving us a lot of legislative history, and then said, well, Sabine's the first project to go forward. And I think counsel for Sierra Club said he wasn't aware of any challenges because all this is new. So everybody's trying to figure out what their role is in a new environment. And so FERC's saying, we're going to do what we normally do. We're not going to get into indirect effects. We're not going to get into cumulative effects. And your argument has been, as I understand it, well, we have to separate out operational effects and economic effects. And that's all for energy to look at. And then, as I understand your argument as well, actually Congress has already looked at it as to free trade countries. So no one. There is no review on that point unless FERC does it. And so how do we contemplate that Congress intended in those circumstances that where it designated FERC as a lead agency on the environmental question, that FERC was not meant to go beyond what I'll call its traditional role?
I think for purposes of divining Congress's intent, you need to look at the four provisions of the Natural Gas Act that Congress added in 2005.
Is that 717M?
It is not.
You said that was the section that assigned FERC the lead responsibility on environmental matters.
Yes, 717N is one of them where the FERC is the lead agency for purposes of NEPA and federal authorizations. But we do not believe that that section can be construed to trump the limited statutory authority that the FERC has in other sections. And I'll go through the sections one by one that I think are relevant.
No, I don't need you to go through the statute.
Okay. But I will point out, I think 717N is focusing on the timeliness of agency decision-making. In subsection B, FERC is designated as the lead agency, but in subsection...
Well, it's an interesting choice of words by Congress, the lead agency on environmental matters, that for subject that is otherwise a responsibility of the Department of Energy.
Well, the lead agency, but not the sole agency.
Not the sole, but energy doesn't want to get, you know, half a report from FERC. It wants a full report.
Well, that certainly must be true. But to the extent the Department of Energy as a cooperating agency does not receive the full loaf that it wants, it has the ability, and in fact...
So FERC says, ooh, goodness, we've got this report from FERC, and it doesn't look at half of the relevant stuff. So we have to hire experts and scientists and gather information and do it ourselves.
Yes, DOE does need to do it itself or assign responsibility to do
back to FERC.
No. What happened is there are 2012 reports and there are 2014 reports.
No, but I'm just trying to understand the statutory scheme, and I thought Judge Griffith's questions about what does it mean to be a cooperating agency? I mean, Congress added this section in there in this context.
Yes, for the purposes of NGA Section 3 export and import reviews.
Yeah.
But to the extent the Department of Energy is unable to receive the full environmental impact statement that it informs not just simply the FERC's review, but also the DOE's review of the export, the Department of Energy has the ability, as it has exercised, to engage in supplemental review.
Is there any other statute that you're aware of that Congress has passed that designates a lead agency for NEPA purposes?
I'm not aware of any such statute, but again, I'm referring back to the focus on coordination and expedition.
No, I know. I'm just trying to figure out that Congress, DOE was not obligated to delegate these construction decisions to FERC. It's a decision it chose to make, correct? It could have done it all itself.
Correct, but it's uncertain now in light of the 2005 statute where you now have 717B that gives the commission exclusive authority over LNG terminals, which is actually a defined phrase in 717A11, whether that is still an authority DOE could withhold from the commission at this point, but it doesn't matter because they've also delegated that authority to us as well.
If DOE had made in 2004, Energy hadn't made the delegation and something like this came across its plate. And it said, well, we're going to do the NEPA analysis, but we're only going to look at the construction right now, knowing that there could be free trade or non-free trade applications.
Right,
later,
at that point.
Wouldn't somebody have a pretty good argument that it was improper segmentation under NEPA?
They could make that argument prior to 2004. Again, the FERC's responsibility at that point was entirely with respect to delegated
They'd
authority.
Have a good argument, right? So I don't understand how the scope of a proper NEPA analysis can be changed just based on a delegation.
Well, I will point out with respect to segmentation, this is an argument that Sierra Club is not making under 40 CFR 1508.25.
One way of looking at their indirect
okay.
cumulative arguments is that it's another way of packaging these segmentation concerns. You're all trees and no forest, and you're the lead agency, and if it's not now, it's never going to happen. So look at the forest and not just the trees.
No, I would say we are all trees and some forest, but not the entire forest.
Yeah, but if you're the lead agency, you're supposed to look at the whole forest.
We are the lead agency with respect to the preparation of the environmental impact statement. That is not to suggest that Congress has sub silentio delegated the entire forest to us. So I will
just
note.
Not for making the export decision, but for evaluating
the impact of
the consequences of building export facilities, which are that exports will happen.
Well, with respect to the facilities, the agency did consider all air emissions, including greenhouse gas emissions from the facility. We
from the facility's operation and construction, but not from the gas getting there.
From the gas getting there, of course, we would have jurisdiction over the upstream natural gas pipeline as well under a different section of the natural gas.
The gas extraction is going into that pipeline.
The gas extraction itself, the production opportunities are not regulated by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Those are state-regulated authorities. And this is something that actually comes into play in the public citizen case, which looked at the jurisdiction of the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration and said that that agency only has limited authority with respect to Mexican trucks on U.S. Highways. The FERC has noted that it does not have jurisdiction over those upstream activities, which undermines its ability to discern which production areas will actually result in the delivery of natural gas to the FERC.
It has to have jurisdiction over.
Correct. Right. The commission said we do not have to have jurisdiction, but the commission said it's relevant in trying to ascertain the when, where, whys of natural gas delivery. For purposes of NEPA, the agency, my agency, is trying to discern and develop relevant information that will meaningfully inform the public and will meaningfully inform the decision maker. The agency developed all information that was necessary to meaningfully inform the FERC in its review of these particular facilities. To the extent that environmental review did not discern additional information necessary to the Department of Energy's review, the Department of Energy engaged in supplemental environmental fact-finding to base its own decision.
Part of the argument you were making in your briefs, tell me if I'm wrong, was that FERC's task is a facility-specific task, and you have to determine the environmental consequences of building and operating this facility, and the sort of low, at least national, if not global, economic and environmental consequences that they're concerned about just can't be tied to any one individual facility. Is that
yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
But the Department of Energy study that's in, I think this is part of the record they attached, included an analysis of the Lavaca Bay facility, and it references four other facilities. So they actually undertook the very facility-specific analyses that the commission here said it's not possible to do. And I just don't know why the commission couldn't do exactly what Deloitte did, and DOE went out there and found.
We're not saying that it's impossible to do. What the commission found was that such an exercise would not provide relevant, meaningful information.
Relevant, meaningful information. They make estimates. They go, so here's the range. Here are the impacts that one facility will cause. When you bring this one facility online, here are the upstream consequences. We can do it. Of course, it's not precise in the sense that you can have a single answer to it, but we can identify the range of consequences. It seems to prove that it's reasonably foreseeable and doable. Why couldn't this be exactly what?
Well, we're not saying there's anything wrong with developing a range of consequences, but as the agency said, the Energy Information Administration study in 2012 actually demonstrates the limitations of such an analysis.
Well, that's one study, but then you have the Lavaca Bay study by Deloitte Touche, which seemed to do. NEPA doesn't require pinpoint accuracy. It
Correct.
Requires an evaluation of consequences, and sometimes that is worst case, best case scenario. Here's the range, but at least we're grappling with the issue. It can be done. It was done. And so all these arguments about, oh, we can't tie those things to a facility by facility decision making that FERC does just seems wrong to me.
Well, there are many studies. There's the 2012 EIA study. There's the NERA Economic Consulting study. There's the Deloitte study in 2014. There's the environmental addendum. There's the greenhouse gas life cycle study. To the extent that those studies are relevant to the FERC decision-making process, any party can, and Sierra Club did, present such a study to us.
But why not part of the NEPA process? That's the claim, isn't it? That if it's part of the NEPA process, it may affect the overall decision in the way that these other studies not. They weren't part of the NEPA process.
Well, the Sierra Club is also engaged in the NEPA process. We issue our draft environmental statement. We put it out there for notice and comment, and parties have the ability.
No, but these types of modeling that are demonstrated in these other studies, you all say we can't do it because this is just beyond the realm of what's reasonably foreseeable. And I think, I don't want to speak for Judge Millett, but the question is, no, it shows it can be done. It's not. It's not divination here. It's estimations. Some of it has the air of the speculative, but it's possible And why isn't it required?
Well, we're certainly not.
What's the harm in doing this? Right.
Well, we're certainly not doubting that it can be done. And with respect to what's the harm?
And I guess the question is whether it's valuable, right? And your argument is that it's just not valuable to the decision.
Yes, for NEPA purposes, it's the question of value. And Sierra Club is focusing primarily on what it perceives to be the most valuable study, the Energy Information Administration study. Sierra Club is able to choose which of the studies best supports its case, and the commission found that that particular study is just not valuable enough. Just
but why isn't the Lavaca Bay study valuable? I mean, that says on a facility-specific basis, here are the consequences of bringing this thing up online to export natural gas. That seems to be exactly what they're concerned about.
Well,
isn't
if
that really valuable?
Well, obviously, the value increases as the analysis becomes more focused on the particular facility. There was no such analysis that was specific to the Freeport facility, and with respect to the
that's their complaint. That's the point. It's the objection.
That is their complaint, but their complaint focuses primarily on a study.
Well, primarily, but this is part of the story too. Maybe one thing I'm not getting here. Just be wrong about when it comes to doing a NEPA analysis, is the agency sort of passive in the sense that it's the duty of Sierra Club to hand you Lavaca Bay and say, here it is, you can do this too? Or do the agencies, how much sort of affirmative duty do they have to say, you know, we think this can be done, we need to do it, or will someone give us the information? Is it proactive or reactive?
Well, it's a combination of both. The agency has a responsibility to engage all arguments and to discern all reasonably foreseeable consequences. Even if you can discern an increase in natural gas production, and even if you can somehow tie that to the authorization of any one particular facility, you still have the issue of the emissions effect, and you still have the issue of whether the agency's approval of any facility can be tied to additional coal burning and coal-based emissions, which we believe is simply not reasonably foreseeable.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Counsel for interveners.
Thank you, Your Honor. Jonathan Franklin representing, this time, the Freeport interveners. I think there's been a fair amount of confusion about how the statutory authorities interplay and how the cooperating agency process works. That's not surprising because it was confusing to me, too. And I'm going to try to explain how it works and how I think it all fits together. With regard to the division of responsibilities here, it is true, as Judge Millett said, with regard to free trade nations, the NEPA analysis is now or never. In fact, it's never. Congress has declared that these applications shall be approved without modification or delay. So when DOE gets one of those, it doesn't even put it out for public comment. They get approved as Congress has directed. That is a public citizen, direct public citizen issue. Just as a public citizen, there is no NEPA analysis because NEPA, the rule of reason applies to, quote, the usefulness of any new potential information to the decision-making process. So with regard to free trade status nations, it's not useful because Congress has said it's going to happen, just like the Mexican trucks.
Well, I'm sorry, okay. I don't mean to interrupt.
No, that's fine.
It would be helpful to have this explained. I hope in the course of answering this you'll explain how we know that means, did Congress mean forget NEPA entirely when it's free trade, or did that mean front load these export concerns in the decision to construct and operate the first instance?
With regard to free trade, forget entirely. It doesn't fit. It's without modification.
Has any court held that, or is that in the legislature?
Public citizen, I think it's direct on public citizen.
About NEPA just doesn't apply to this decision.
No, because the information wouldn't be useful to the non-discretionary decision.
It's an open question.
It may be, but here's what I would say is public citizen controls. Now, that's free trade. With non-free trade, DOE opens two different dockets. So it's got the free trade dockets. Those go through. But it does have the non-free trade dockets. And here, Judge Rogers, I'm going to try to explain, I think, maybe some confusion there. With regard to the non-free trade, DOE did not say we just don't have the statutory authority to look at NEPA. NEPA doesn't apply. They did not say that, nor could they have. NEPA applies.
And I don't think anybody suggested that.
No. But when they said we're not looking at the induced production effects, it wasn't because they didn't have the statutory authority to look at it. So it's not this shell game that I'm hearing from some parties that...
I thought the point was they said they didn't have to. They weren't required to do it. They had the authority to do it, but they weren't required.
Their view was they weren't required by NEPA because, just as FERC declared, that it was not reasonably foreseeable. But it wasn't because they didn't have the statutory authority. That's a free trade issue, non-free trade. So that's one thing. And we have, Sierra Club has petitioned for rehearing as to one slice of the DOE's non-free trade order on Freeport. Not the whole thing, because they actually were untimely as to most of it. But for some of it, they have petitioned for rehearing, and that is pending. Now, with regard to you, Judge Griffith, on the cooperating agency process, the reason they use the term lead agency is because that is the term that is used in the CEQ regulations. And I apologize, I do not have the citations at hand on this, but there is a series of CEQ regulations that discuss lead and cooperating agencies. And this is ultimately an internal government matter. So the way it works in practice is the lead agency will participate. All of the cooperating agencies will provide their comments. So if DOE thinks that FERC should consider some effect that FERC isn't considering, the way that works is DOE tells FERC, hey, FERC, we think you should consider this. Now, that didn't happen here because DOE and FERC are actually on the same page on this, but DOE could have said, we think, FERC, you should consider this. FERC could then say...
And could that go beyond FERC's statutory authority?
I think it could, but, and here's where I think we have to explain, when you get to court, when somebody's petitioning for review, as they are here, that is limited to determining whether the agency that made the decision here, FERC, on authorizing in its role to authorize Freeport, whether that agency complied with NEPA. So then what would happen if it got to court on DOE? DOE could then, if its concerns were, as it was in this case, addressed by FERC, or it's comfortable with FERC's analysis, it can then say, we're comfortable with FERC's analysis, and that becomes then DOE's NEPA analysis. But then when it's reviewed from a DOE order, you'd be looking to see whether or not the NEPA analysis that DOE did, which could incorporate FERC's, and in fact in this case did, complies with its statutory authority. And here I'm going to again quote
what if you have sort of a bigger picture problem, and that is, look, it's nice to divide the world into DOE and FERC, but the reality is this isn't a statutory division. This is DOE. This is all on DOE's shoulders, and DOE made a delegation. It had the statutory authority to make the delegation,
right,
but that doesn't mean it had the statutory authority to wash its hands of its ultimate responsibility to do a NEPA analysis that is not artificially chopped up.
And so if
someone wanted to just challenge not FERC's NEPA and DOE's NEPA, but this upfront decision to chop up the process, because we've got precedent saying that under NEPA you're not allowed to sort of chop it up artificially and then miss the whole picture.
But that's,
where would that happen? Where would that challenge?
You could challenge either place. You could say you could bring a segmentation challenge. That hasn't been brought here, and the reason it hasn't been brought here is that that's not their complaint. Their complaint is not
that could be brought here, or would that have to be brought in the challenge in the DOE?
You could bring it either place, but again, either challenge is going to focus on the agency's responsibilities. So here, and I'm going to quote the delegation order here because I think it's important, in the 2006 delegation order, which is 00-004.00A, and it's at 1.21A, and what it says is that FERC has been delegated the authority to, quote, implement the determinations made by DOE, the Assistant Secretary of Fossil Energy. So that's FERC's role here, is to implement DOE determinations. Going back to the free trade, you know, DOE has determined, not even had to make that determination because Congress said it had to, that there will be exports from this facility. We know that. There will be. It can't be stopped. Congress has said there will be. So Sierra Club's objections here, which are essentially, you know, to use the spigot analogy, that FERC shouldn't allow the building of the spigot, can't do that. That's not something that FERC has the authority to stop. They can't say no spigot.
It could say no spigot here.
Well,
you have to move it to Oregon.
I'm going to address that. It was actually on my list of things. The citing decision, yeah, you could say this site versus another, but the impacts that Sierra Club is talking about are not site-specific. That's why they haven't raised that issue. The reason they haven't is because the impacts they're talking about are not occurring at any site, this site, another site. They're occurring thousands of miles away, and in case of global issues, maybe 20,000 miles away. That makes this case, in fact, different from any case that I'm aware of, where they're saying that the reasonably foreseeable environmental impacts from this facility could actually occur in North Dakota. That's their point, and that's what the agency said is not reasonably foreseeable. But just getting back to the agency's divisions of authority, Public Citizen says, again, that the rule of reason looks to the usefulness of any new potential information to the decision-making process. To the extent, and I think it is what Sierra Club is arguing, and they have made them clear in their briefs, that this information on whether or not exports generally are good or bad, that is not useful to FERC's decision making.
No, it's not a question of good or bad. Congress has made that decision.
Right. Yeah.
But the question is how.
Well, there's nothing that information could contribute to FERC's process.
The hypothetical would be that if the facility is located in the state of Louisiana,
right,
the indirect effects and the cumulative effects will be 100. On the other hand, if the facility is located in Oregon, the effects will be 5. So FERC has a responsibility to consider environmental impact, public interest, and the facility would still carry out Congress's purpose. The spigot would be on, but it would be in a different place.
No, I don't think that could.
They can't do that?
No, because, you know, again, getting just back to the free trade status nations, we presented an application to DOE, which DOE granted, as it must grant without modification or delay, for an export terminal at this site. We have that authorization from DOE, which models the statute. So
DOE has already approved this site?
Of course, yes. They've approved
it
both.
What did they approve, though?
They didn't approve the site. They approved
our application
to free trade countries from this site.
From the site.
FERC approved the site.
FERC has this over, but again, the delegation order says that FERC's obligation is to implement the decision of the Fossil Energy Assistant Secretary. But when we get back to DOE,
so
again,
that means DOE picks the site and DOE makes the export decision.
On FTA, nations, all I'm saying is that FERC doesn't have the authority to say no spigot. But
DOE is actually making the decision on non-FTA, too. FERC's
they are.
Decision, FERC works for DOE,
right,
so the siting, and then DOE will make its own. It won't be automatic, but it'll make its own,
right,
even non-free trade.
It will. And what I'm saying here is that for the volumes are the same. So we're going to be able to export from the facility. What we were going to be exporting, where it's going to go, DOE does have the say on the non-free trade. And we do have several proceedings before DOE with regard specifically to non-free trade nations. Those are the ones that Sierra Club, in one instance, has intervened and has sought rehearing of.
Can you tell me just empirically how many potential customers are free trade and how many are non-free trade?
Yeah.
Is it 50-50? Is it mostly free trade?
There is a list of free trade nations, and that list is about 14 or 15 of them, and so that there is a definite list of the free trade
nations.
Are these
Western European nations, basically?
It's all over the map. I can read them.
Are they major industrial nations?
It has to do with whether they have a free trade agreement in place that has a national treatment for natural gas. So it's not all free trade countries.
But Japan's not, right? Isn't Japan one of the free trade?
Japan is not on the list.
Yeah.
Japan is not
on that now. Yeah.
Australia is on the list. Canada is on the list. I can read them if you like.
And what's the volume that we're talking about here?
We don't know. The volumes have been authorized for both. So we are not limited in terms of our authority for DOE authorizations. We're not limited to where they go.
So for the non-free trade countries, you say you have several proceedings.
Yes.
Are these what I'll call diplomatic questions, or are they? What kinds of questions are being addressed in those proceedings?
The public interest analysis. So DOE does its public interest analysis with regard to non-free trade.
What I call foreign relations. But, no, I mean seriously, it's that kind of. They're not into the details about the facility itself.
No, they're into a lot of details, but they're more concerned, again, with the exports themselves, not with the not with the facility. But they put conditions as well on theirs. But all I'm saying
is... Are they looking at environmental consequences?
Absolutely.
Like, are they doing Lavaca-Bay-type analyses?
Well, I'm not sure exactly what that analysis is, but they did. If you look at...
It's in your appendix, 570.
Right. I'm aware of the Deloitte report, and in terms of whether it relates to Freeport, I'm not. But there is an order, and that's also in the appendix. It's not in the record. There's a final order that DOE issued for the Freeport project that was issued on, I believe it was November 14th of 2014. That's the one in part, not entirely, that Sierra Club has sought rehearing of. That one has extensive environmental analyses.
Does it include site-specific analysis like Lavaca-Bay?
It includes an analysis, and I'm going to have to go back and look to see what they did. I think they referred to the Deloitte study, but it certainly includes an analysis of the effects. Now, they did that in their...
The effects, that's in
Induced production, what they thought of as potential impacts of induced production. But not, again, I want to be clear, DOE has agreed with FERC that those don't need to be considered under NEPA. But DOE considered them under its own separate public interest determination, which it is, with regard to non-free trade nations, required to undergo on the public interest of allowing exports. So it definitely considered all of that. Ultimately, it concluded on balance that this was in the public interest, and including on the environmental side. But with regard to NEPA, it agreed with FERC. Now, if Sierra Club wants to disagree with that with regard to the part of the proceeding that they have participated in, they can do that. They can bring, once DOE issues its order, they can bring that together. They can bring that argument to court, assuming they've satisfied all the jurisdictional objections, you know, standards for that proceeding. All I'm saying here is that FERC's duty here is not as broad as Sierra Club says, and it is not, to the extent Sierra Club is complaining about exports generally, that is something that they have to take to Congress, because Congress has already determined, at least with regard to some of them, that they are going to happen. And FERC is mandated by statute to implement that decision. So, again,
that's what, but I haven't really heard it so much from FERC, is the concern here is how one could, it's not that you can't do site-specific studies, which is what I've heard, and that just doesn't seem to be true. They did it for the Lavaca Bay. It's not that you can't tie these things down. It's that you can't ever figure out how much of that impact is coming from free trade versus non-free trade. Mm.
You couldn't do that.
They also said free trade, Congress has said.
You certainly couldn't do that, but you also, frankly, can't, in our view, and I think in FERC's and DOE's view, you can't meaningfully analyze this in terms of trying to figure out what the impacts are going to be, because with regard to global impacts, you're going to have to look at the whole world, and nobody's arguing that you can
do
that.
Right, I mean, there's stages to an argument. There could be the global, and there could be a big
right.
Fine. We still need to at least assess, for purposes of the United States, or for purposes of the region of the United States, what the consequences of increasing demand for natural
gas. And again, somebody can model something, but that doesn't make it reasonably foreseeable. I mean, I go back to my, maybe it was silly, but I mean, there are people who think they can model the stock market, and they'll tell you they can. That the fact that you try to make a model, models are only good as the inputs.
Is that the category you'd put this Deloitte study into?
I don't put it in that, but the study that I'm familiar with that's in the appendix is really one of a very general nature, like the EIA study, like the other study that was...
No, those were much more general and broader.
Well, I think the one anyway that I'm looking at was pretty broad and talks about sort of national impacts, generally speaking, from exports.
Although they haven't argued about it. But can you just tell me, is this construction started, ongoing?
Yes, and I would like to say that, yes, because we have authorization from FERC, we have started the construction. We have a tremendous amount of work. There's somewhere around 800 workers that are working on the project right now. There's, and it was mentioned before, there is around $14 billion of investment in this. So I was going to say, to the extent, for example, on the electric issue, if there's something that the court thinks that FERC might need to look at again, we would urge that the court do what it has done in many of these cases, which is it's a big if, and we're not saying that this should or would happen, but if it's going to find something, that it should remand but not vacate as it has done in as recently as, well, there's a decision in the, I don't remember the name of it, the Bear something or other. I think Judge Griffith and Judge Rogers, I think, were both on that. So the Black Oak Energy, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. That kind of analysis. We do have a tremendous amount in this, and we wouldn't want those workers to somehow lose their jobs. But having said that, ultimately here, FERC did what it was required to do, and that is to look at the reasonably foreseeable impacts from the siting of this facility and the facility operations that would be meaningful to the analysis that it's being asked to do. And it did all of that. And it's entitled to deference, and under the rule of reason, FERC made a reasonable determination that is going to go through 948 pages of environmental analysis, but the next part that Sierra Club is asking is just too speculative for it to matter to what it's doing. It's not just a paperwork statute. It's not just let's look at it because somebody thinks you could look at it. It has to be something that is meaningful, that contributes to the agency's process. Whereas here, FERC has, is what I would argue, no authority to say no spigot at all, and only limited authority with regard to the rest of its work.
Can add all kinds of conditions.
And they did, and they added lots of conditions.
I know, but if they'd had more information, they might have added more.
But no condition that would, there was
I'm
no condition that they could add that would satisfy what Sierra Club is talking about.
Maybe there's, not, but that's a different issue.
I don't think it's a different issue. I think it's the issue. Anyway, that's my last point would be to say that I think FERC acted reasonably within its discretion, and that decision should be affirmed. The petition for review should be denied.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, counsel for petitioner? Petitioners?
Thank you, Your Honor. We've had a lot of discussion today, so I'd like to just briefly make two points. The first is that we've analogized this export facility to a spigot. And as we've discussed, the location, but also the size of the spigot matters. We discussed how the location matters because of the indirect impacts of a facility, say, in the Gulf Coast are likely to be different than the indirect impacts of a facility in Oregon. But also FERC's determination and the FERC proceeding about the size of the spigot influenced the DOE proceedings. And we've actually seen that in a very clear way in this particular case where one of the project applicants non-free trade agreement applications to the Department of Energy sought authorization to export gas in excess of the capacity of the actual proposed facility. And the Department of Energy denied that application in part by reducing the scope of the non-free trade agreement authorization only to match the volume of gas that this facility could actually process. And you can see that discussion in the Department of Energy order in the joint appendix, page 1377. That plainly indicates that the nature, scope, the determinations of the FERC proceeding do influence DOE's decision making. And in this very case, we've seen DOE do a partial denial of an export license application where FERC, DOE said, you're not going to have a way to do this because FERC isn't going to authorize you to do that additional capacity of gas. The second point I'd like to make is that there's nothing in the record here that suggests that gas from this facility will actually be exported if the only available license is to free trade agreement countries. There is a list of 14 countries that have, I believe it's 14, that have the particular kind of free trade agreement at issue in the Natural Gas Act, where the agreement specifically requires national treatment for natural gas. The only one of those countries that is currently an importer of liquefied natural gas is South Korea. And there's no indication that their demand for natural gas is not already being met by, say, exports from Australia.
And what countries did they get their, did DOE authorize them to, what free trade countries did DOE authorize them to export to from this facility?
The DOE authorization doesn't specify particular countries. It just says you can export to any country that is on the list of countries that have free trade agreements that specify national treatment for natural gas. And so the only country that's currently on that list that is an existing importer of liquefied natural gas, so could be a potential market, would be South Korea. We have seen the contracts from a number of the currently proposed export facilities in the United States, and I don't believe any of the contracts that are available to the public that have been filed with the Department of Energy for any of these facilities indicate that any United States exports are currently intended to go to South Korea. So there's nothing in the record that indicates that exports would actually occur if the only authorization was to free trade agreement countries. Those were the two points I had. I'd be obviously happy to.
All right. Thank you, counsel. We will take both cases under advisement.